support comes from Air Camp, a week-long summer camp that introduces middle school students to the wonders of flight and the science, technology, engineering, and math of aviation. Air Camp students explore Dayton's aviation sites, take flight training, and pilot a plane. Applications are accepted at aircampusa.com.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher, and happy Lent, or maybe solemn reflective Lent, I should say, and that is only if you're into Lent, that period between Ash Wednesday and Easter, a time of reflection, of making things right for Christians around the world, by forgiving, for some people, burying the hatchet, so to speak. And the idea of forgiveness is a tenet not just of Christianity, of course, but also Islam, Judaism, Hinduism. Almost all religions are built on a foundation of forgiveness and mercy. Joining us today to talk about the religious stake in the idea of forgiveness is Imam Pamela Taylor of the Columbus Unity Mosque. Welcome to the show, Pamela.
Hi, thank you.
Also joining us is the Reverend Dr. Brad Benow. He's dean at the Trinity Lutheran Seminary. Welcome to the show, Dr. Benow.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Dr. Benow, we usually hear about giving up spirits or sugar or doing a good deed. Where does forgiveness play a role in the part of Lent these days?
It plays a big part still. And those other things are interesting and fun, but probably not at the core of what Christians are all about when it comes to Lent. Lent for Christians for at least 1800 or 1900 years has been a time primarily to think about our human condition, the fact that we won't live forever. We're mortal, and Christians would say we're sinful. Not to overplay that, but it is who we are. We're broken. And so during Lent, we reflect on that, and we realize both our need to be forgiven. I think that's probably really at the core of Lent for Christians. But out of that, and recognizing that we are forgiven, the possibility of extending forgiveness to others, because not forgiving in the end really hurts the person who's not forgiving, not the person who's done the wrong.
I understand. Well, what does forgiveness look like for a modern Christian? You just talked about it's a two-way street. But yeah. What does it look like?
I think sometimes it's helpful to start with what is forgiveness not? And
okay.
Maybe by negative example, it becomes a little clearer. Forgiveness is not just forgetting. If one forgets too quickly, the same thing may come back and bite you again, and that's not very instructive. Someone said once that, if you happen to see Jesus on the street and stop Jesus and said, do you remember that Judas of Iscariot fellow, the one who did you so wrong and got you arrested and got you killed? It's unthinkable that Jesus would say, I don't remember him. I've forgotten. It's just,
okay.
Of course, there's some things you can't forget. Forgiveness is not excusing. If you can excuse something, then you understand what happened, and it's not a level of deep hurt. It's not merely tolerating something. If you can tolerate it, then just tolerate it. You don't have to.
No wrong done.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. Forgiveness deals with things that are deep hurts, and it takes a process and some time to be able to let go of that. And I think that's primarily for Christians what forgiveness is about, is a process of letting go. And I'm suspicious of people who want to forgive in an instant. One author I've read calls those people five-star forgivers. And and that usually means the same issue is going to come back and get you again because you're not vigilant, about what has actually happened. But recognizing how you've been hurt and coming to terms with what the hurt means, and then being able, usually over a period of time, to let go of that, I think is how forgiveness unfolds.
When you brought up the issue of mortality in Lent,
right.
It did make me think about, well, maybe that's why a lot of people near the end of their lives both seek forgiveness and forgive.
But, awareness of your death does have a wonderful way of concentrating your attention. Woody Allen said, nobody can really contemplate death and carry a tune. It's hard to go through life constantly focusing on that. But for many people, in moments where you come to terms with the fact you're not going to live forever, it does concentrate your attention. And you want to make things right with people, and you want to clear things up. And that's an impulse, I think, that should be encouraged.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about forgiveness today. Dr. Brad Beenow, Dean at Trinity Lutheran Seminary, is with us. And also by phone, Pamela Taylor, Imam of Columbus Unity Mosque. Pamela, Christians have Lent. Jews have the time between their high holidays. Do Muslims have a similar holiday where forgiveness is part of the equation?
Well, certainly there's lots of parallels between Lent and Ramadan, which is our month when we fast during the daylight hours. And the idea that you're not only controlling your hunger and your need for food, but also your temper, your selfish desires, and amongst those is the desire for justice and righteous rage. So the idea that during Ramadan you would seek forgiveness and give forgiveness is part and parcel of the season.
How do Muslims ask for forgiveness, or how do they repent?
Well, so there's obviously two different layers there. One is the relationship between the person with God. And like Christians, we have the parable of Adam and Eve. And, you know, Adam and Eve fell and committed sin and ate of the tree, and they sought forgiveness from God and humbled themselves and said, "We've wronged ourselves." And in the Muslim tradition, God forgives them, and they're sent down to earth as a completion of their destiny to be vicegerents on earth for God. And this process of forgiveness is an ongoing one. You know, we don't believe it's accomplished through a single act, the sacrifice of Jesus, but through the ongoing seeking of forgiveness from God for all of the myriad little things that we do or big things that we do. And also through our relationships with others. So forgiveness can come directly from God, but part of our duty to God is to seek forgiveness of those we may have wronged and to give forgiveness to those who may have wronged us.
In the story of Adam and Eve, there is a little bit of difference there. God forgives them in the Christian tradition, but there's more of an angry streak to it. He seems to send, you know, he doesn't send them to earth. He banishes them from Eden.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
Dr. Beenow?
Yes, that's true. One of the really interesting parts of that story is that as Adam and Eve are, that they've recognized their nakedness and their shame that they are who they are and their fallenness. But one of the great parts of that story is God clothes them. Their fig leaves don't hold up, so to speak, is not enough. And God clothes them in animal skins. It's sort of the first instance of God's willingness to be gracious, to cover people in their mistakes and in their shame and guilt and so forth. And I always want to hold up that part of the story, that from the very beginning, Christians would read that story and say, God has you covered.
Pamela, what about the idea of the difference between forgiveness and, say, reconciliation?
Yeah, that is mentioned actually in the Quran. In one of the chapters, it talks about forgiving and being reconciled as two separate processes. And, in fact, it says that we have three choices. One is to forgive. One is to, you know, to be reconciled through some sort of mutual agreement. And the other is to choose recompense. So, for instance, if you lose a loved one, if someone kills, you know, your brother, your sister, your child, you can forgive, you can have a reconciliation between the parties, or you could ask for recompense, whether it be punishment in jail or a fine or something like that.
What about the idea of retribution? Is that the opposite of forgiveness? Dr. Beenow?
It's hard
revenge?
To see, it's hard to see where it fits. I think Christians who often have identified the so-called seven deadly sins, anger is one of the deadly sins. I think it's important to remember there is wrong wrath as well as right wrath. A truly righteous indignation that fuels you to go out and right the wrongs of society, there's a place for that. Martin Luther King Jr. would be a great example of that. The question is, can you invoke that right sense of wrath without doing violence to anyone? So when retribution leads to violence, we've crossed a line that's not helpful. And it's amazing to me the commonality we have between the three great religions that we're talking about here, mm-hmm. on this point. Retribution tastes good. That's why we get tempted into it. But sometimes so does not forgiving. Tastes awfully good. I'm reminded, author Anne Lamott has said that not forgiving is like drinking rat poison and then sitting around waiting for the rat to die. It just doesn't work that way. It hurts you. And so in a misbegotten sort of way, sometimes we think that by not forgiving, we're gonna get our retribution. And it really only comes back on us.
And the Quran also talks about, you know, there are limits to justice. And, you know, you can transgress the bounds through a pursuit of justice and can actually hurt yourself and hurt society if you're too, you know, fierce in your seeking of justice. So, you know, it warns us, don't be unjust in seeking justice. And I think that's exactly what Dr. Reverend is talking about.
Right. And I think that the point that we've underscored here, that forgiveness and reconciliation are not exactly the same thing. This is a hard truth for most of us to grasp. It takes one to forgive. It takes two to reconcile. And so even though I may have come to a place where I'm able to let go of a wrong and I'm willing to forgive, it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to put this relationship back together the way it used to be. And that can be a hard truth sometimes to have to face, but I think we need to be aware of it. It takes two to reconcile, and life doesn't always bring that our way.
Pamela?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, forgiveness is something that you make peace with yourself, really, in your own heart. And reconciliation is a path forward for relationships to be maintained so that there's not a complete break. And sometimes there may need to be a complete break, and only the person can decide, you know, where that relationship is going to go for them and whether they're going to be able to make that reconciliation or not. But the idea that both of them have to come together and work together to make the relationship continue forward is separate from them living in peace in their own heart, which is what I think forgiveness is about.
Are there instances in either faiths or any that you know of where the followers are not commanded to forgive? Are there any unforgivable acts? Pamela?
The only thing that was mentioned in the Quran that God doesn't forgive is setting up partners with God, you know, worshiping other people than God, and dedicating your good works to other than God. Between people, no, not really. Anything can be forgiven, and reconciliation can be attempted for any wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bino?
Yeah, I think the Christian impulse is that forgiveness is always the thing to pursue and always the thing you want to do, and because it's good for you. God wills the health, the well-being, the salvation, the restoration, the wholeness of everyone and everything. And so to say, well, there's some things you don't need to get around to forgiving, that's going to keep you less than whole, and that's not, as Christians would understand it, that's not part of God's desire for us.
Thanks for talking about this today. The Reverend Dr. Brad Bienow, Dean at Trinity Lutheran Seminary, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And also Pamela Taylor, Imam of Columbus Unity Mosque. Pamela, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about forgiveness. Are you struggling to forgive somebody? Want to talk about it? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or maybe you have a story about forgiveness that has meant a lot to you. You can also call us. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and thanks for joining us today for All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's 28 degrees with some sunshine and a high near 40 degrees. Clear skies for tonight, a low of 28, cloudy skies on Friday with a high of 51, and showers are likely for Friday night, a low of 41 degrees.
Support comes from Mauburn Academy, inviting you to a new community parent and grandparent seminar entitled Help, My Grandchild Has ADHD, featuring author Judy Kersner, March 19th at 7 p.m. A reservation for this open seminar is required. More information at MauburnAcademy.org. And support comes from OSU's Department of Neurology, conducting a planned emergency study to see if progesterone can improve the outcome of a traumatic brain injury, or TBI. Details on the PROTECT study, including a community opinion survey, and how to opt out of the study, are at protectiii.com. And All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Forgiving you is easy, but forgetting the longest time. I just keep thinking, and your memory is forever on my mind. You know I'll always love you.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today we're talking about forgiveness, why it's so hard sometimes, and why it matters to some people. Joining us now, actually, we're waiting for a guest to join us. But in the meantime, we'd like to hear from you. Tell us a story about forgiveness. Maybe you're having a hard time forgiving somebody for something. We can talk about that, too. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jeannie in Newburgh, New York.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I wanted to chip in, if I could, with my comments on the Jewish tradition.
Please
of,
do.
Of forgiveness.
Yes.
Well, we get a 10-day grace period, you might call it, at the start of each year, which you alluded to earlier. It's between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And those 10 days are the days during which we have to, you know, make sure that we've sincerely apologized and asked forgiveness from those people that we've hurt in any way during the previous year. But it's very, very stated outright in our prayers that for sins against God, like wasting our time, for example, you know, the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, atones. But for sins against man, the Day of Atonement does not atone until we've sincerely asked forgiveness from the people whom we have hurt.
What do we mean by sincerely? Then atonement, it's not something you see on the outside. It's not something you know, because the sincerity is hard to measure, isn't it?
Exactly, but you know it in your own heart. If you are sincere, if you really believe that you have done wrong, you understand what you've done wrong, you can explain it to yourself, and you try your best to explain it to the person that you've hurt, and you ask that person in sincerity for forgiveness, then you're considered to be atoning for that sin.
And the person who doles out uh-huh. the forgiveness, where do they sit? What's their role? Must they forgive?
Well, it's not that they must, but if they can find it in their hearts to, we also ask God to let us forgive others. That's an important part of Yom Kippur, too. Being able to forgive someone is just as important as asking for forgiveness and knowing what you've done wrong and asking for forgiveness from them. So yes, forgive the person who was offended or who was hurt. To be able to forgive is a huge blessing and a good thing to do for at the start of the year.
Well, Jeannie, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate that.
Thank you, Ann.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye. If you want to share a story of forgiveness, share your point of view on forgiveness, we welcome those calls, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Rachel in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Hi, Ann. As it is, I'm an atheist, and yet I do believe that forgiveness is very important because I believe this is the only life we have, and that it's up to your own consciousness, our own conscience. I have a friend that I have not forgiven. She hasn't asked for forgiveness. Maybe if she would ask for forgiveness, then maybe I could work on forgiving her. But right now, I'm at a point where I can't, because what she did to me and to my family is just so horrendous, and it's affecting me still very negatively to this day. So I don't know. Now that if she ever came to me, I don't think it wouldn't be instantaneous. It would be probably still a long process, but at this point, the wounds are still too fresh.
What about that wound? I mean, is the wound about what she did to you? When you say that it's still with you and it's still causing problems, is the offense, do the ramifications of the offense still causing problems?
Yes.
So I guess it's something like, and I'm not suggesting this, but like murder, where you can never take back a murder.
Sure, yeah, yeah. It isn't that egregious. And, you know, on the case of murder, I believe we should abolish the death penalty, and that's because I think, you know, there have been people who say that hasn't helped them, you know, move on, and because they didn't forgive the person. And then there are people who have forgiven the offender and have felt more closure. Anyway, that's a totally different matter. But yeah, it's something that can't be taken back.
Well, it's interesting. I think it's an important thing you say. It's the closure idea. You think that's a completely different matter?
No, I guess that's probably an integral part of forgiveness is the closure, because, I mean, I don't like to hold on to this feeling, but yeah, there's no closure for it. It's still an ongoing dealing with the ramifications is an ongoing process, and I don't know. Yeah, and maybe if I ever talked to her again, I haven't spoken to her since the event. I don't know.
Do you think you'll need to talk to her to forgive her? You said you needed her to apologize.
Oh yes, yeah. I think I definitely need that.
And you could go the rest of your life?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I think I'd actually be quite comfortable with that.
Okay. Well, Rachel, thanks a lot for giving us a call and sharing that.
Thank you very much, Anne.
You bet.
Have a great day.
You too. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about forgiveness today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and would like to hear what you think about the idea of forgiveness. Are there some things that are unforgivable? Have you forgiven somebody and it's made a big difference in your life or not? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu. You can also tweet us at WOSU All Sides. Once again, we're talking about forgiveness. And joining us now is Dr. Robert Enright. He teaches psychology at the University of Wisconsin and is the author of The Forgiving Life. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
You write about forgiveness and the forgiving life. What's the distinction?
Well, forgiving is an act towards someone who's been unjust to you. The forgiving life is more of a lifestyle where you approach your life with a sense of mercy and understanding, and the acts themselves accumulate to where they become part of your identity, part of who you are. So there's quite a big difference in terms of how one develops as a person.
And we were talking earlier about forgiveness and reconciliation, and you agree with my previous guests. Forgiveness and reconciliation are very different. Tell us how you think they differ.
Well, they have to differ logically in this sense. Forgiveness, like patience, kindness, justice, is a moral virtue. All moral virtues start within the person as a sense of goodness and flow out to others for good. Reconciliation is not a moral virtue. It's two or more people working their way back together in mutual trust. So one can forgive what we call unilaterally by oneself, even if the other rejects that and doesn't even want it. But you can't reconcile by yourself because the other can say, get lost. I don't want to have anything to do with you, even if you forgive me.
When we were talking about forgiveness in religious terms, the idea was that God wants you to forgive because it's good for you. It's not necessarily about the mercy toward others, but that you'll be better off.
Well, you know, I think that's a misconception, and here's why I say that. No moral virtue is for the self. When you are just or fair, it is not just for yourself. If you stop at the stoplight, you don't do so just for yourself so you won't get a ticket. You do so to protect others. So it has to be the case that forgiveness, if it's a moral virtue, is always without exception for others. But here's the difference. With forgiveness, a consequence of forgiving is that I benefit. And I think people confuse these two issues. The essence of what forgiveness is, which is a flowing out of mercy to others who have hurt us, and the consequence that as I forgive, and our research bears this out, and it's in the book, The Forgiving Life, people become less depressed, less anxious, less angry. They actually increase in self-esteem and hope for the future. A lot of good things happen psychologically as a consequence of forgiving, but we then don't want to confuse the consequence with what it is and just say forgiveness is what I do for myself.
A caller, just before you joined us, Dr. Enright, a caller said that she cannot forgive this person who wronged her, at least until this person apologizes, and thinks that she could go the rest of her life not forgiving this person. What about that connection between forgiveness and apology?
Well, first of all, forgiveness is our choice. I have an earlier book for the general public before The Forgiving Life called Forgiveness is a Choice, and I deliberately entitled it that so people don't feel a grim obligation where they have to forgive. We have to keep that very clearly in mind. We have to be fair in certain ways or we get arrested. We do not have to forgive if we do not wish to. So the caller is perfectly fine in not forgiving if she so chooses. But if she's holding out forgiveness and is ready to do so until the other apologizes, my counsel to her would be this: you are now trapped, and the other person is completely in control of your goodness. And some people, when they realize that, in other words, the other person, knowing you want an apology, won't do it, and so you're trapped with resentment, possibly hatred, a disrupted emotional life, just because someone hasn't made a particular move to you by saying those little words, "I apologize." I think she's not being fair to herself.
Michael in Pennsylvania, you're on the air with Robert Enright, author of The Forgiving Life. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Oh, thank you very much.
You said you had a personal story about forgiveness.
Yes, yes. I was married one time, 1980, and divorced in 2007. I've got four absolutely beautiful kids from 20 to 29 right now, two girls, two boys. And my wife one day came in and told me, you know, the night the lights went out in Texas, she says, "You've got to go. I need time and space." This is after 25 years of marriage. Well, I am a Christian. I read the Bible and I believe it. But what I found is that, you know, I forgave her and I even forgave my children because they went ahead and joined with their mother and decided not to come with their father. And I didn't want to get in the way of, you know, that always that fighting and wrestling over children. So I just backed completely away, which is what she asked me to do. And then when she divorced me, I just went ahead and, you know, I just, you know, it takes time, you know, hurt takes time to forgive. And mm-hmm. So I forgave her. I wrote her a letter, told her how much I loved her and how much I would forgive her. And I did, with no obligation from her. She doesn't have to, you know, apologize to me unless she wants to, because she's an individual of her own. And so, and anytime anything comes up about it, I go ahead and in my personality, in my soul, I just, you know, if I get angry or frustrated or upset over the situation, I just forgive again. Because although I totally feel like she's forgiven from my heart, anytime the frustration of the offense might come up in another way, I just go ahead and forgive again, because I believe if I take care of me, then, you know, she can, you know, I don't have the root of bitterness. See, the root of bitterness will destroy a person from inside out.
Dr. Enright, that idea, he sounds like he's talking about a life of forgiveness.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think it's very heroic, given what Michael has faced, a huge injustice coming out of the blue like that, where he allowed her to take the children without acrimony and continues to forgive. Yes, Michael, you are leading the forgiving life, and you're right. You see, that's an example of one of the consequences of leading the forgiving life. You can stay peaceful in your heart, and that's what you have some control over right now. You don't have control over your former wife's behavior. And you're correct. If you let that resentment live inside you rather than the more peaceful sense of giving to her what you can, it could have destroyed you. And I agree with you on that. And so that's why I call it heroic forgiveness.
Thank you, Michael, for that call. And you
come very close.
Thank you very much. Dr. Enright, you say that some people can look at someone like Michael or consider a story like Michael, and you have a similar story that I read about in your book, they can see that as weakness.
Absolutely. Friedrich Nietzsche, the German philosopher, said that forgiveness is what he called sublimated revenge. In other words, you really want revenge and you just go the opposite and you're all goody-goody. Well, let's think about it. Michael didn't have much choice in the matter when his wife walked out. He didn't have much choice in the matter when the children said, we want to live with mom. So what then is weak about saying, I will stand and let this go as it is? He ended up giving his wife, his ex-wife, whether she realizes it or not, a great gift. He didn't fight her. And he gave his children a great gift. He could have let his resentment be a divide for his children, where they are now being tugged by both parents. Children have already lost the family as an intact entity. Now do they want to lose it with their father yelling and screaming? Mm-hmm. Is that weakness? I would say that is profound strength.
Bob and Marion, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I've been doing a lot of work on forgiveness for years. And the one thing I noticed in almost all discussions is that the issue of this collusion between the perpetrator and victim rarely comes up. And one thing I've come up with. One is that a perpetrator has a real lack of empathy. Otherwise, they wouldn't have engaged in the act in the first place. And in my experience, even though a perpetrator is forgiven, that's not going to change them. They're going to continue doing the same crap that they've always done. And I found that the anger that one feels is really a defensive reaction on the side of the victim. That really, if you can transfer that into rage, red flags start to be not ignored any longer. You know, you don't allow that stuff to happen to you again. Mm. Well, no. That forgiveness is really the issue here.
That's an interesting distinction. Robert Enright, we need to take a break right now, but can we get back to that?
Yes,
when
I
we
have
return?
Some thoughts on that.
Okay. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about forgiveness today. I want to get to your calls. I also want to get to your emails. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Last year was the hottest year in the U.S. on record. On the next Fresh Air, Justin Gillis talks about his New York Times series, Temperature Rising, examining climate change and extreme weather. Also, Jake Tapper looks back on his years as ABC's White House correspondent and looks ahead to his new CNN show, which starts Monday. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon. And stay right here in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour 2 of All Sides begins with reaction to the announcement of the new Pope. Stay with us for Hour 2 of All Sides today from 11 till noon. And sunshine for today, warming up to a high near 40 degrees. Clouds tonight and a low of 28. Support for 89.7 comes from First Congregational Church in downtown Columbus, presenting organist Jeremy Fassell, artist in residence at the Washington National Cathedral, in concert this Sunday afternoon at 4. More information at first-church.org. And support for 89.7 comes from Lynn Wankett, wishing you a happy Pi Day. Enjoy this special transcendental number and all other math today, March 14th. All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. In honor of Lent and just the idea of it, we've been talking about forgiveness, how tough that is to do sometimes, especially in cases of murder or incest or sexual assault. Still with us is Dr. Robert Enright of the University of Wisconsin. He's author of The Forgiving Life. We were talking with Bob from Marion. He said he's been working for a long time on forgiveness, but that sometimes there are times when you can't forgive and that only the rage will keep the perpetrator from, will keep you safe from future offenses. Dr. Enright, can you talk about that?
I think it's a mistake on his part because I think Bob is confusing rage with justice. Rage doesn't always get us a satisfying justice because rage can help us, not help us, but it can hinder us where we cross a line and we then become revengeful and we want more than justice. So I would urge Bob to think about how rage can actually eat away at him and give more in a negative sense to the other guy than he had ever thought possible. And I think he's absolutely right. Some perpetrators are not going to change. I wouldn't make a blanket statement and say none will. I think that's stereotyping people who act badly. But when we do have people who are entrenched in their behavior, let's first of all think about forgiving so our rage lessens, so we can be more clear-headed about what we have to do for a fair solution. I don't think our fair solutions come when we're enraged.
Thanks a lot, Bob, for that call. We really appreciate it. Joining us now in the studio is the founder of a support group for victims of sexual abuse, Thomas Wendt. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
This kind of fits in with perhaps what a lot of the discussions are in your groups or often are, that feeling that I could never forget, and how do I get justice and also forgive?
That's correct. I think that one of the issues that we deal with for survivors of sexual abuse is trying to maintain a level of protection of who we were and who we are today. And holding on to that resentment, I think sometimes is maybe a misconception that that's a way of still showing loyalty to who we were. But what I think it does is it puts us in a position of holding on to the pain and the sorrow and the damage that's been done and doesn't free us up to live a more productive and peaceful life.
We talked earlier about how most religions are built on a strong foundation of forgiveness, but your relationship to religion was challenged. Your abuser was your minister. That just is an issue that comes up over and over again, and it's always so shocking to people that someone that you put so much trust in. Does that an extra layer for you and for people in your position?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, knowing that a representative of God did the things to me that were done, it kind of convolutes the relationship that you have with God. And knowing and placing the resentment or the anger in the proper place, I think, is critical in the healing. And I do see most recently in my recovery work the connection between forgiveness and religion and how the two are intertwined in many ways for me, because not only, you know, was I offended and betrayed by the minister, but then I led myself to believe that I was betrayed also by my church and by God. And, you know, intellectually, I know that that's not the case, but down in my heart there was this resentment, and it needed to belong to somebody or someplace. And so I spread that out across the minister and church and God.
And you actually wrote to the minister?
Yes, I did. I wrote to him last spring to just ask him to, well, I really wasn't asking him anything. I was wanting to acknowledge that I still remembered what was done to me, and that, and the impact that it had on my life, and the challenges that I have had in trying to, within my own mind, reconcile, you know, what that means for me as a person. And it took a great deal of courage and energy and support from a wide variety of folks to get me to that place where I was writing a letter where I basically was not asking for anything in return, because I did not want to put myself in a position of being disappointed. The good news for me is that after receiving the letter, he did acknowledge his misconduct, stepped down from his position in the church, and has since gone into retirement.
Robert Enright, forgiveness can take a long time. Tom Wendt just told us about something that probably took many years to achieve. For something as horrendous as a sex abuse of a child, the idea of forgiveness can dig as deep for people who have a family argument. You hear about that where people have family arguments, and for years they go on not speaking to each other.
That's absolutely correct.
It's amazing how forgiveness can have that much power in two such very different situations.
It's true, because the anger lives on and is hard to cast off. We've worked with people in hospice, elderly, who know they're dying, who know they have 6 months to live, and we help them through a forgiveness process. And they had anger to which they were clinging for about 40 or more years. And it was a lot of times in family contexts. And when they forgave, even though all of their physical indicators kept declining, their psychological indicators, including hope for the future, started going up, because they knew they were leaving their family in a better way. And so what Tom is talking about is extremely wise, because what he's showing is this heroic nature of forgiveness again in the face of horrendous abuse. And if you notice how settled Tom is, and you notice how clear-headed he is, and I bet if we asked him, he would say forgiveness helped lead him to that place.
We have an email from Kathleen. She writes, I've forgiven someone for a wrong they committed, but I can't really ever get what they did out of my head. Is it really forgiveness if I can't let it go? It's a good question.
I would say absolutely yes, you're in the process of forgiving. See, we have to be gentle with ourselves when we forgive, because forgiveness is a process. It's like we go on a journey, and as we stop at different places along that journey, we look back at what we've accomplished, but then we look forward, and we don't want to then fool ourselves and say, gee, we haven't even started on the journey yet. Of course we have. And it sounds to me like she has gone a long way on that journey, and now the counsel would be gentle with yourself, because you have come a long way, and now keep at it.
Tom?
Well, the thing that I was thinking as Dr. Enright was talking is, you know, the idea of forgiving one's, you know, misconduct, and then also forgiving yourself for allowing the resentment and the anger to harbor within you for extended periods of time, or sometimes even decades, and how beneficial it is to, you know, release yourself of that. You know, it's kind of like a toxin that is just there. And I think that it makes sense in many cases for survivors of sexual abuse, or really probably of anything, to oftentimes see their lives through the abuse rather than looking at their lives holistically. And I think that in my case, that really is true. I looked at my abuse every moment of every day for decades and saw my life through that lens, and had those resentments and those angers that were oftentimes displaced and, you know, headed towards people that had no idea, you know, what that was all about or where it was coming from. And I don't know that I consciously knew where it was coming from either. But I think that one of the, and I'm very new to this whole process of forgiveness. I mean, we're talking just a matter of weeks. But the idea that if I look at that, you know, thread that has kind of connected me to the abuse throughout my life, and then looking more holistically at my life, that that actually is the same for the minister. You know, his act and his misconduct is just one part of who he is. And it really has just been recently that I realized that, you know, there's something that both of us can do about that.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about forgiveness today. If you have a comment, want to add a story to the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Tom in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. I was on a trip to South Africa and paid a visit to Robben Island, which is off the coast of Cape Town. And that is where Nelson Mandela and other freedom fighters were warehoused for, in Nelson Mandela's case, more than 20 years. And when I was there, the tour was led by a former prisoner, and he knew Nelson Mandela, and he told something that has stuck with me and hopefully will be with me for life. He told us how Nelson Mandela would counsel himself and the other prisoners and would say frequently that if we take the anger that we have with us when we leave this prison, it will be like taking the bars with us, and that we need to, through forgiveness, liberate ourselves from hate. And to me, when I see Nelson Mandela's smile, and it's just a glowing smile, you know that he walked the talk of those important words, and it should be an inspiration for all of us. Interestingly, this person who was leading our tour, who was counseled by Nelson Mandela, said that he had a moment of truth after he was released from the prison. This was about 8 years later. He was serving, he was working as a server at a patio-type cafe, and he was serving some of the wardens and guards who had, you know, lorded over him at the prison. And he felt this kind of well of hate rising up in him, and he really felt like he was going to attack them, but he could hear Nelson Mandela talking about, you know, we need to release ourselves from the prison, and the final liberation is one that we can only do unto ourselves. And the rest of that story is that he finally, this other prisoner finally forgave in that process inside. And I know Tom just earlier, minutes ago, talked about a process of releasing yourself. And I do think that there is a certain prison that we put ourselves in and keep ourselves in when we hold on to the hate and can't forgive or reconcile. So anyway, Nelson Mandela, he is the gold standard for forgiveness.
Tom, thank you so much. Dr. Enright, you write about Nelson Mandela in your book as well.
He's one of my forgiveness heroes. When he gave his inaugural address, he did not mention the word forgiveness once, if I'm correct, but he had his jailer in a place of honor right there. So his actions were speaking very, very loudly, where he didn't even have to explain it. He's quite amazing.
An email from Courtney. She says, when I was a senior in high school, my class went on our overnight senior retreat. At one point, I had stood before my class and told them about my experience being the new kid years ago and everything that had happened since, including some bullying and being picked on. Later in the retreat, we were given the opportunity to forgive and reconcile with each other. All but one of the people who had picked on me came over and apologized for anything they said or did. It made the rest of my time there so much better. I will never forget what they did. So apology can certainly help.
Indeed. We find that apology helps a great deal. The key is one shouldn't then hold that up as a requirement. But when it comes, it makes forgiveness all the easier.
Scott in Groveport, you're on the air. Welcome, Scott.
Hi. I know you have a little time left.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be brief.
Thank you.
I am curious. I think it's a wonderful conversation. But we as individuals, this forgiving life, we still live in the context of the society. And without a gross generalization, what I've experienced directly and indirectly is that our institutions, our churches, as these gentlemen were referring to, our government, many other institutions, they can't forgive, because if they do admit to a wrongdoing, there's litigation to face. And I don't mean to be cynical, I don't think I am personally, but it concerns me that we have set up two different standards. I agree we need individuals to forgive, but we live in a society with so much such a litigious nature that there's this dilemma where, you know, we see people all the time, you know, refusing, you know, to ask for forgiveness or to admit. I think the great example would be people who we now know were accused of murder and served years in prison or were executed. And, you know, the state will not say, oh, we did anything wrong. It just there was, you know, evidence at the time. I'll stop.
All right. No, I get the point, though. Tom, do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I guess, you know, one of the things that I was thinking is that, you know, in an attempt to try to protect myself from further harm or further disappointment, I went into confronting the minister saying I didn't want anything in return. And the greatest gift that I got back was acknowledgement that it did happen and or that it was done to me, and that the church did do within their organization what they felt was the right and appropriate response to what was done to me. And there's a part of me that, you know, I still am not at the point where I don't have anger and I don't have resentment, and I wish that they had done some other things. But I actually think that the whole idea of forgiveness for me right now is a little bit bigger than myself, and that the folks in the organization, in the Lutheran Church, did what they needed to do to try to protect the greater good of what their mission is. And although that doesn't necessarily sit real well with me or serve me really well, I have to realize that the intentions of everyone there are good on both sides, for myself as well as for my abuser.
We will have to end it there. Robert Enright, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Anna. It was my honor to do so.
Robert Enright, he's a professor of psychology at the University of Wisconsin at Madison and the author of The Forgiving Life. Also, Tom Wendt, thank you for joining us, Tom.
Thank you, Anne.
Tom is the founder of a support group for victims of sexual abuse. And thanks to everybody for your stories and your emails, and thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.